time is 6:30 p.m., and the ad hoc consultants selection subcommittee for the West Papio Trail Gals Rose and Miller meeting is called to order. Copy of the Open Meetings Act posted in the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I'd like to announce the procedure that I will use for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, that the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call. Who's handling that?
Going to get
okay.
His packet.
Who's that?
He'll be right down.
Sounds good.
Oof.
Eric, I had to go get the lid.
Caught Eric off guard.
Chick. Sorry, I grabbed the stack and the folder.
Quorum call, Eric.
Quorum call?
Yep.
Bennett.
Present.
John Gunling.
Here.
Fowler. Leahy. Thompson.
Here.
Fred Conley.
Fred Conley will stand in for Tim Fowler tonight.
Here.
Thanks, Fred.
Okay.
Adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
And moved and seconded. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
And Chair.
Aye. Proof of publication of the meeting notice has been made. Meanwhile, World Herald might have the affidavit here. Public wish to review that. Item number six, review and recommendation on professional services contract with State Money Workshop, KPO Consulting Group. Eric.
Thank you. This is the contract that we've talked about.
Is there a volume?
Thanks. Yep, we've worked with Big Money Workshop and their partner, JEO, on the details of the scope and then the fee associated for the contract for the West Papio. And this is, again, from the Giles up to Millard section. There's not a map included in the attachments tonight. It's just the details for the contract. So if you can scroll down to the next page, kind of quickly walk through what's included in the packet. First page, just the cover. This is the standard modified EJCDC contract that Hutch Blackwell put together for us. Next page is just essentially the title list of the project. Following page is this section is what's listed as Exhibit A. So we skipped a bunch of pages in the middle, which is the standard form that's been modified. And we're working on some changes to that with Big Money Workshop. Exhibit A is the scope of services. And so you can see part one is a list of the services that will be completed throughout the scope of this contract. And that is numbered 1.1 up to 1.40. And those are the different line items that will appear in the invoice that we receive and the different tasks that will be completed through stages of the design work. So that's what's called Exhibit A on our standard contract. That then, the next page, comes with Appendix 1 to Exhibit A, and that's the schedule for the project. And this matches what we had planned in the RFP originally, so that we're essentially done with the design towards the end of our fiscal year. That would be the 90% design at the beginning of May, and finalizing within this fiscal year. The intention is to move on to bidding in the fall of 2017, so that we could look to construction in the spring of 2018 and through the summer and fall of 2018. So that would be calendar 2018 construction with two fiscal years there, but having all of the design work essentially completed in this fiscal year. Next part is Exhibit C, and that's and that lists, if you scroll down just a little bit more, you can see the total toll compensation at $409,152, and then that's broken down by different phases of the design portion. And these are essentially chronological, so the beginning phase and then 10, 30, 60, 90, and final design plans are broken out by the expense per item there. G, on the next page, that's the bidding. That would occur After the end of this fiscal year, probably. That might change, but that's the plan right now. And then the cost for design of interpretive exhibit. So this is this line. We've been doing a little bit of historic research. This is the original transcontinental rail line location before UP moved to the central Omaha main line that they have now. So there's a lot of history in here, so we want to make sure and incorporate that into the trail as we do the design work here. Next one, next page, or two pages, I think. Let's see. Yep, one more. Okay, this one is sideways, but it's the Appendix 3-2 Exhibit C. So on our standard contract, this is the breakdown of the hours per task, and the tasks listed on the left side, 1.1 up to 1.40 again, match the description that was in the previous section. And then on the right side, you can see a breakdown of the cost per line item, or you can carry it down, the cost per different type of personnel. On the right end, you can also see the breakdown between Big Muddy and JEO. So Big Muddy with the trail design, landscape architecture portion, and JEO generally with the structural work and the water resources work at those couple locations where that's needed. And if you go down to the very bottom, you can see the total for those services. There's a the last page should have a total line item value, and that matches the total fee for the contract. So again, yeah, this is the conceptual, preliminary, functional, pre-final, and final design stages, as well as the topographic survey, permitting where required, water resources design and structural, as well as bidding assistance. And the recommendation is to approve this contract. With the contract will be with Big Muddy Workshop, and then they have a partner of JEO. So the contract is just with Big Muddy Workshop directly, and that's the recommendation.
Thank you, Eric. I have a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve staff recommendation.
Yes.
Thank you. A second. And a second that myself. Roll call.
One second.
Can we have some discussion?
I'm sorry. Got ahead of myself there. All right. Let's hear from the public. Anyone from the public who might like to address this issue? Directors? Director, Tommy?
Eric, what is the number that you're using for the estimated cost of the entire project, including the construction period services and the actual construction of the project?
We didn't work through a full construction number as far as I know. Okay, so we don't have a construction number right now. This project, in terms of miles of trail compared to the last section, that was about 1.75. This is about 2.75. But the Oak Hills Creek outfall structure will probably need to be removed and replaced. So that's where that roughly 60% of the design comes in. If you were to scale that up, you might expect something like $1 million to $1.5 million, roughly. Again, that's kind of the order of magnitude we're talking about. But again, we haven't done any breakout of any kind on cost of construction so far.
And this does not include construction period services, is that right?
This does not. The construction services would be an amendment to this contract based on the design so that we know what services would need to be provided. So similar to the dams and other structures we do.
This strikes me as being a very expensive contract. I'm going to vote for it, but I think we're spending a lot of money on this one that doesn't necessarily need to be spent.
There are a couple items in here that we may or may not decide we need to move forward on. There's a kind of a ditch next to the West Papio by the Tyson plant, which we may decide to incorporate and do some design work in preparation for the next phase of the trail. We might also get there and realize the trail can move over 15 feet, and we can leave that for now and not actually work on that. There's a couple items in there that could potentially be, and we've talked with Big Muddy about, we might choose to do them or we might not choose to do them, in which case we would just line out that task item on the scope and it just would not be completed.
Thank you.
Sir Thompson?
So when they came in with their first proposal, how much did you knock it down, assuming you did?
So actually a couple things changed from the original proposal. The survey portion was originally for, as far as I understood, insurance reasons, not listed that Big Money preferred that we would contract that directly. That's not generally how we do that, so that was included after the first proposal. So the original, so that was actually an increase from the proposal that Big Money brought originally. Other than that, the line items that could potentially be removed are the areas where we would see savings here. So we haven't, we didn't specifically say we're going to knock off X dollars or line out these particular items from the contract originally. There's not a dollar amount that was removed from the contract.
Yeah, surveying, that's something we, our survey can do in-house? I didn't hear.
We don't have time.
The chair is blocking your voice, Marlon. I can't hear.
Staff does not have time to do that with our survey group.
Okay, thanks for answering. There's, and maybe these are in our other proposals, but attending the NRD board meeting, there seems to be some, I mean, four hour meeting. That's, I know it's, time is money for contractors.
Right.
That just caught my eye, but how will you, as administering this contract, reflect the submission of the invoice for that? I mean, did they attend? Do we owe them the four hours at whatever rate it is? How do you intend to do that, Eric?
So we expect invoices to be submitted based on the line item tasks. So like you said, if one person attends the board meeting, as they are tonight, then we would obviously not pay, 8 hours of board meeting report this evening on an invoice, because I expect one person for 1 hour this evening.
And then one other question, the interpretive exhibit design you'd mentioned, it's historic rail line, I guess, and I know Big Muddy has done great on their designs, like on the Missouri River. Oh, I saw John in there. Yeah, there's John. So at $5,000 a piece, that's kind of an estimate depending on that. It's probably follow the same interpretive trail signs we have throughout the area. But
yeah.
That would be, again, it came in at $4,000 apiece. So you'll monitor that way accordingly.
Right. And one expected location is the Hell Creek Bridge, which we're also working on stabilizing because it is so interesting. So there's several features that will be good places to put these types of locations for people to sit, relax, enjoy the natural resources that are available through the area. So that's where we think those will happen.
Okay.
Other directors?
Eric, would you clarify again whether surveying is included or is excluded from this contract?
I'm sorry, that was confusing. It is included in this contract. Originally, it was not, and we specifically said we do not want to separately contract that. We want Big Money to have a sub.
That is good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good questions. Other directors, any other questions, input? Speaking for myself, I think this project is extremely valuable to the community. This leg of the trail system is getting closer to completing the trail through Old Millard. It's going to eventually link four major sports complexes for the benefit of the public: Westchester girls softball, Anderson Fields boys baseball, Omaha Star soccer, and then the State of Nebraska multi-sport complex. So this trail is going to be driven right through high-density R7 residential areas, Harrison Hills, Lumberyard District, Discovery. Those are all very close. Oak Hills, of course, St. John Vianney, Sandoz, Oak Hills golf courses are also right along this leg of the trail. So very excited to see this move forward if we get the vote. So with that, unless there's any other comments, we have a roll call.
Thompson.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Chair.
Yes. All right, thank you. And with that, we're adjourned.
Okay. I'm not going to need the gavel. I don't need it. Sure. Okay, moving right ahead, I'm going to call the projects, programs, projects, and operations subcommittee to order. Tim Fowler, is he?
He's not here.
Tim Fowler, we don't have an alternate for our subcommittee tonight.
That's okay. You don't. You can go with four.
All right. Moving right ahead, then. You heard earlier about the Open Meetings Act. The copy is posted outside the door. With that, quorum call, please.
Director Fred Conley.
Here.
Director Keiser.
Here.
Director Thompson.
Here.
Chairman John Conley.
Here. Next item is the adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Keiser.
Yes.
Director Thompson.
Yes.
Chairman John Conley.
Yes.
Director Fred Conley.
I have here an affidavit of proof of publication of tonight's meeting, and that will become part of the permanent records of tonight's activities. Moving now to item six is review and recommendation on a resolution to adopt the district's multi-hazard mitigation plan. Lori Lasker, please.
Good evening. Tonight I have with me Jeff Henson, who is the project manager with JEO. JEO is the consulting firm that you selected to help us with the mitigation plan update. Just as a refresher, we adopted our first mitigation plan in 2006. Having this plan allows us to access FEMA grant funding for mitigation projects, like the type of funding that we use on the buyout projects. And we do have to update that plan every 5 years. It was last updated in 2011, so this is the next one. It has been approved by FEMA, so now we're on to the very final step of adopting it. We have a little bit of an update. Bill, if you could go to the PowerPoint. And Jeff will go through a brief presentation just to kind of refresh you on the plan and the goals and objectives and the outcome.
Good evening. Thank you. Turn that on. That'll help. So we began the project roughly February of last year, where we had a kickoff meeting with the NRD. We followed that with a hazard mitigation planning workshop. The goal of the workshop was to inform the participating jurisdictions what the plan was, what would be expected of them throughout the planning process, and the benefits of having the hazard mitigation plan. Your planning workshop was the first planning workshop the JEO conducted. We were very pleased with the attendance, 18 jurisdictions represented by 26 different attendees. And I think the quality of plan reflects the community and other jurisdictions' preparedness to work on the project. So for the project schedule, we held six round one public meetings through April and May. We had five additional round two public meetings in September. We also met one-on-one with jurisdictions that expressed an interest in doing so. We met one-on-one with all of the communities participating in the community rating system just to better meet their needs and also to develop a hazard mitigation plan that complies with the requirements of the community rating system. So when they go through their evaluation, their annual evaluations, they'll receive additional credits for having the plan that includes information beyond what is required as a minimum by FEMA for that document. The plan was completed in January of this year. There was a public review period where jurisdictions were asked to review the information they provided, provide comment back to JEO to ensure that when we came to adoption over the summer, that they would be prepared and able to adopt the plan and comfortable with what was included representing their jurisdiction. So for participation, we have a list of all of the communities participating in the next couple of slides. The plan in 2016 included eight more participants than the plan did in 2011, and you see the list of added jurisdictions there that we were able to get to participate for the 2016 plan. I received an email this afternoon that Thurston County has already adopted the plan as well, so very encouraged to have received that. So here we see participation 2011 versus 2016. Listing all of those jurisdictions. So the plans and objectives for the goals, or excuse me, the plan goals and objectives largely remain consistent with what was included in the 2011 plan: protect health and safety of the public, reduce or prevent future damage to critical facilities, critical infrastructure, maintain operations after hazards. I will spare you all of the objectives unless you just would like me to read those to you. We'll move forward. Very well. Reduce or prevent future damage to existing properties and natural resources, and promote efficient use of public funds. So those were the guiding principles surrounding the plan development. For the planning process in 2016, there were several hazards added. The reason behind that, local planning mechanisms must mirror what's included in the state planning mechanism. So things like chemical fix sites, radiological fix sites, chemical transportation that had not been included previously were included in the 2016 plan. And as we went through the process, we pulled information, data, and statistics related to a number of events that occurred per hazard, used that to establish an approximate annual probability of occurrence moving forward, and then quantified the potential extent of the hazards based on the past hazards across the district. Also examined the hazard loss history. For this information, we primarily utilized the National Climate Data Center and the Risk Management Center through USDA for the agricultural losses. So that shows us kind of an overview of what loss looks like across the district. So for plan approval, the plan was submitted to NEMA in February of this year. On June 7th, we received the letter of approval from FEMA pending adoption by the local jurisdictions. The plan was approved on the first submission to NEMA and FEMA, which we were very pleased with. And in the feedback we received from FEMA, they praised the climate adaptation discussion included in the plan, summaries of the dams and levees, and histories of flooding throughout the district. So we felt that it was a very positive review, and we're quite pleased with that. So as we're moving forward, we are continuing to work with the participating jurisdictions on the adoption process. I believe the NRD has applied for grants again that you're eligible for because of the hazard mitigation plan. Another great example of how this plan empowers communities to build resilience would be the City of Blair. They've recently completed a substantial hazard mitigation project, some funded by post disaster mitigation funds, which is one of the eligibilities this plan creates. And they also did apply for the Hazard Mitigation Assistance Program, and it was a sizable grant. I can't tell you exactly what the total was, but it was significant. And we hope that folks move forward with implementing projects that have been identified through this planning process as they're moving forward. One thing I did want to touch on was, some potential follow-ups that may be beneficial. One thing that we've identified as a deficiency with hazard mitigation plans would be implementing them. Communities frequently struggle with taking that next step. You have a plan, you've identified projects, you have grant eligibility. Where do we go from there? One thing that we've had some success with is conducting hazard mitigation assistance funding workshop. Each year, the hazard mitigation grant program receives annual appropriations from Congress for the pre-disaster mitigation grant and the flood mitigation grant. I think there is benefit to reconvening closer to when those grant periods are, talking with jurisdictions about what they may be interested in, highlighting what FEMA's prioritization would be for those grant opportunities, and helping them understand how to access the grants that they've now become eligible for. We've also seen, an opportunity to continue reinforcing the relationships that are fostered during a planning process. Emergency exercises, I know the NRDs are impacted by things like dam failure, flooding. Train derailments was a surprisingly high concern for a number of jurisdictions in the northern part of the district. I think it has direct implications for a natural resource district as well. If you lose chemicals on the ground, your groundwater is going to be endangered. So whether or not an NRD wanted to sponsor an emergency exercise or participate in existing opportunities, that's something I would strongly encourage and continue to work with emergency preparedness planning and risk awareness communications across the district, ensuring that folks understand kind of what their vulnerabilities are, not just local elected officials, but the average members of the public as well. So with that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions or comments that you have.
Okay. I've got a couple more things. So like Jeff said, the plan was approved, and it was approved on the first submission. No revisions required. So the very last process that this district has to go through is the resolution of adoption, which was in your packet. It is a very lengthy, whereas therefore language. And we do recommend that you approve that resolution.
Okay, the chair would entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the resolutions. Do these need to be read since they're on the board?
You can show them, just display them.
They're displayed on the board. All right. Any discussion on the motion, please, from the public? Directors? Director Thompson.
I think it was on the agenda for Omaha City Council and Douglas County today. Do you know if they approved it?
I have not had an update from them, no.
All right.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Craig Conley?
Aye.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. Now, thank you. Now moving ahead to item 7 is review and recommendation on the second amended interlocal agreement for the Lower Platte River Invasive Vegetation Management Program. Paul Woodward.
Good evening. Just a quick review. We've probably been in some sort of interlocal or working on the spraying contract since 2009, probably first started spraying in 2010. The current interlocal agreement that's set up has each of the three entities, that's Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and us, contributing $20,000 a year. As you can see for our budget and stuff, we've pretty much effectively been using that money over the course of that time. And the program has seemed to work. Overall, we've seen reduction in areas each year of more phragmites. It's still there. It still can spread to different areas and can occur, so we need to keep it at bay. However, there seems to be more of an occurrence right now of some of willows and cottonwoods starting to take over a certain sandbar, and as they continue to grow and develop, that sandbar doesn't move as part of the braided river anymore. It becomes more of a permanent sandbar, and over time it would become more of a permanent island. What we've seen that overgrowth can do at different times, I've listed a few things there. It doesn't push out the noxious weeds. It actually allows them a place to grow and makes it harder for us to get to them. Can take away water. That's why it's part of our integrated management plan to address invasive vegetation in the entire river channel. It can cause and increases the risk for flooding, not only during normal springtime floods, but during ice jams as well. It can diminish sandbar formation and scour. We talked about that. That hurts the endangered and threatened species habitat on the river. And then it can be a deterrent for recreational use and access. So overall, then, where we're at, we did just review and accept bids last month on a new contractor. Those were good competitive bids based on what we thought we would see, but they are approximately 20% higher than the last five-year period. We had a pretty good low-cost operation there that was going on for several years. So where we're at now with that increase and then hopefully taking on a little bit more acres every year of some of these other willows and cottonwoods, we've rewritten the interlocal agreement to allow for that change. And then we've also decided we would propose that each NRD look at this and move from $20,000 a year annually to $30,000 a year annually. The other districts have this interlocal in front of them. None have acted yet, but they have all started and included that as part of their budgeting process. So that's where it's at right now.
It should entertain a motion on this recommendation.
Second.
Rich Teaser.
Teaser's motion, seconded by Fred Conley. Any public discussion, please? Directors? Director Thompson.
You know, when I read this, you said you're going to kill some cottonwoods. Well, that's a state tree in Nebraska. I don't know how I want to read. I want to vote on this killing our state tree. Do you want to help my conscience out here? The old cottonwoods, you could wipe them out.
They would be young.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Oh, we have enough of them?
And they're ample supply.
Okay.
Did you get an adequate answer?
Well, I think I got a lot of answers. So.
Okay. Any other
Which is fine.
Any pertinent questions?
All vegetation in the wrong place is a weed.
Yeah, there you go.
What are you going to use?
Let me quote Marlon on that.
Says the vegetation. The past several years, the Habitat has been the herbicide that's been used, the water-approved Habitat herbicide. What's that?
Which herbicide?
Habitat is the name of
it. Habitat herbicide?
Yeah. It's the name of the herbicide, yeah.
Well, EPA-approved water.
Yeah, so it doesn't affect aquatic life.
We've used it since 2008.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. Thank you. Now moving ahead to the review and recommendation on proposed easements for thrasher development on Tract 1, WP6. Amanda Grant, please.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay, maybe if we could go to the map. I think it might just be the second page. But for consideration tonight are a permanent easement and then also a temporary grading permit for the property that we actually have not even closed on yet, but that we discussed a few months ago, Tract 1 at WP6. And just for your info, we close on Friday on this property. So this, what we purchased is shown in blue here. It's basically the south right-of-way line of the road. And then around here, so this will be the dam structures right in here for WP6. And so we have been approached by the city of Papillion and the development to the north about having permanent easements for stormwater detention ponds on this tract that we just recently signed purchase agreements and we'll close on. So you can kind of see through the blue, this is one of the areas and the other is right here. So that would be the permanent easements, and then the temporary grading easement is kind of a bigger stretch that includes the grading for this road. And I won't show the whole entire easement document. I think you have that was posted and you have that in your packets probably. But the offer was, it's 2.855 acres if you total these two permanent easement areas. And the proposal is to purchase those for half of the purchase price. So we purchased that land for $55,000 and they intend to purchase the easement for $27,500. It's a total of just over $78,500 for that easement. And then the details of that easement, the City of Papillion staff and district staff worked on some conditions that would be necessary for that to for us to recommend that. And so those conditions have been or will be met, and they were included in the letter from Olson Associates. Eric Galley is also here this evening. If you have any questions, he's representing the developer to the north, and so he could answer those questions. But the things that we wanted to have in there were maintenance agreements for sure. We wanted there will be a trail over one of the embankments for the stormwater basins, and so we wanted to make sure that it would be that development's cost to have our on-site representative there during the construction of that basin so that we know that the base is stable enough for the trail, certain things like that, that the seeding was what we would spec for the upland areas of the reservoir, some details like that. So we've worked those details out, and it's probably important to note this is part of the land that was annexed by the City of Papillion. This would have been maybe last August, I believe. And so this will be not like Prairie Queen, where we will maintain it until a certain date. In this case, the City of Papillion would take this rec site over immediately. They also would be in charge of making sure that this development maintains these stormwater basins, whether they were here or here. So they've requested that we consider having them on the park property. And then the other piece to this is the temporary grading permit. And just as a note, we did have FIRA review that grading and compare that with flood storage to make sure that there wouldn't be any impact to the flood storage of the reservoir. And they have done that and determined that there's no impact to the flood storage. So this would strictly just be a temporary come-in grade seed according to the specifications that we've given them. And then, and it doesn't impact any of the park recreation features either. So we recommend execution of the permanent storm sewer drainage, stormwater quality basin easement, and also the temporary grading permit. And then there still will be our district legal counsel, Hush Blackwell, will still have to review these easements and have possibly some comments. And the city of Papillion would also have to approve them as well.
Okay. Chair to entertain a motion on this item. Director Teaser made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Director Fred Conley. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson.
I can't approve this. We bought this land, WP6, and we've got a private company coming and want to use our land for their benefit of not putting what's required on their land. That's ridiculous. Okay, 20, half the price of what we paid for the land, well, we get some compensation. Big deal. Look at that. There should be plenty of room to do what they have to do for the purposes of which they want to use our land for. I can't agree to that. I can't, you know, for us to say, hey, anyway, go ahead and use our land to put your requirements on that the city requires you to do.
Mm-hmm.
No, we shouldn't be doing that. Sure, the city of Papillion is going to take that over some year. Let them give it away at that point. But I don't think it's in our best interest to give that land away at a fraction of the cost we paid for it, just for the benefit of one company, Thrasher, and I don't care who it is, it's a private company, want to use our land for that purpose. I do not agree with that, and I won't vote for it.
You want to respond to that, Amanda?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I certainly understand that, and I think that there are a few benefits to the district for allowing that. First of all, it was the request of the city of Papillion, so that's one reason, and they will take over that park. So that was the one major reason. The next is it does build the embankment for the pedestrian trail at that small section, and I know it's a small section, but a section of the pedestrian trail will be built according to our specifications by that developer. And there's some money that we receive. There's some money that we receive from that permanent easement, this 78.5, that we can use for other district.
Wouldn't we have built the trail on our land anyway?
We would have, okay, but we would have paid for.
I don't buy that.
Well, they would do the grading for that, right. So that would be a portion of that we don't have to build.
Amanda, I want to rephrase Director Thompson's question a little different way and come back on essentially the same viewpoint that we're giving up area here, yet the flood storage remains the same. How can that be?
So, well, part of it's an excavation, so that helps. And then it's really just, it's the magnitude. I mean, you look at the cut and the fill and then the magnitude of flood storage that we anticipated and what that grading changes. So
they will change. They'll increase the cut somewhere else to offset that then.
Yeah, evidently the layout and FIRA has confirmed that layout provides more cut than fill, and so it doesn't impact the flood storage.
And this particular area of that land is not conducive to put recreational fields or anything like it's kind of hilly.
It's very steep.
It's very steep, and so it has minimal value to the site anyway. Again, that's why Papillion brought it to us to prove.
Well, if it has minimal value, we shouldn't have bought the damn land anyway in that corner.
Well, we needed that.
Well, but that's I know that's after the fact, but I'm still not convinced. It sets a horrible precedent to. They say, oh, any parkland we have, oh, you got development next to it? Hey, we'll go to the NRD. They'll give us some land.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll pay a fraction. We'll do some fancy stuff to it. Put in a trail. No, I'm not convinced.
Yeah. Any other directors have a comment? Director Bonner.
I'm actually going to disagree with the director. I'll be voting for this on Thursday. I think it's a reasonable accommodation. It's a great example of a way that we can cut red tape, help a private entity who is going to be able to maximize the value of their property, thus paying additional property tax. I don't think it's a lot to ask. We accomplish our goals. Pavilion is happy. And the private owner there is happy. So I'll be voting for it on Thursday. Thank you.
Any other director comments? In my case, I'm not accepting the idea that we get half the value we paid for the land. And if we can't get what we paid for it, I probably will oppose this Thursday night on that basis alone.
Okay.
Any other questions? Do you want
to, if you allow me to point out one other thing just to, that you should consider, or something to consider at least as you're making your decision. So originally when the family asked us to purchase this in between, you remember when we purchased this tract and there was this land that was kind of in between what this development wanted to purchase and what we wanted to purchase, and they asked that we include that in ours. So we did do that, and after we approved that, the development did agree to buy all the way to the right-of-way. So there's some portion of land that we would have bought that they did buy. So we did save a little bit of money in that regard. And that was a good partnership. In that fact, we worked together and we did not end up having to buy all of what we had thought. So anyway, something else to consider.
What is that dark area to the south of the road right there?
Right here. This is the area that, so here up to the middle of the road was that area that the family had asked that we consider purchasing, because at that time this development did not want to purchase.
And does that have much useful storage on it? Is it pretty shallow?
It's all pretty steep in here. And so this red line is the top of dam. So that would be the max flood storage. So this area up above here, that dark area, is all above top of dam. So
it's
basically upland area.
It's naturally that high?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Nope.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. Report to the board, please.
3A, 1A.
Thank you. Now moving ahead to review and recommendation on the West Papio Trail, Giles Road to Miller Avenue interlocal agreement. Eric Williams, please.
Thank you. This is the same section of trail that we talked about in the ad hoc committee just a little while ago. In order to move forward with this design, it does include portions in both La Vista at the south side and Omaha at the north side. And so we've been talking with both cities about collaboration on paying for both the design and eventually the construction of this trail. The breakdown is 60-20-20. Distance of trail by jurisdiction is something like 50-50. It's pretty close depending on the final location. So we talked to Omaha and La Vista about that, and it seems like they agree that this is a fair way to break down the contributions towards the design cost. We were working on this in tandem with the contract, so there were maybe three versions or emails that we had sent to Omaha and La Vista about this interlocal based on the kind of early projection, updated, and final numbers. So the dollar amount you see reflected as $270,000, $90,000, $90,000, that is based on the final contract number of $409,000 that we discussed earlier, plus the 10%, which would be if there were change orders that came on the project, which we usually expect. That would mean we do not need to go back and amend the interlocal in order to pay for the potential for change orders during the design on this project. So there is a little bit of additional room on the interlocal, but that does not directly impact the contract. If there were changes on the contract, we would still talk with Big Money about those. This just leaves room to not come back and jump through the hoops again on the interlocal with all three jurisdictions. The final updated version we sent to Omaha and La Vista, I think on Thursday evening, maybe about 10 o'clock. I was here kind of later that evening, and then talked with Omaha on Friday morning. and La Vista on Friday afternoon. Again, both are in process of discussing in Omaha with Parks Department Director, and in La Vista preparing to talk to the City Council about including this in their budget. So it does look like it's moving forward on both sides for the design portion. We are the interlocal that's proposed here outlines the duties and obligations of each party. Essentially, it's just about reimbursement to the district for the cost of the design, and the expectation is that that will occur at the end of the design in about May. So the timeline here just says when we request reimbursement, we expect that in May. So, like I said, this was going along at the same time as the design contract, and we think we've got them both worked out together, and that both other parties will be taking the same interlocal, subject to a couple final red lines in the language, to their councils as well in the near future. So the recommendation is to approve or authorize the general manager to execute this interlocal. With there are a couple slight changes that we already know since last Thursday when this was posted.
Move as staff recommendation.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
Thank you, Director Connelly. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Bonnet.
This is kind of the money portion of that prior vote of the ad hoc subcommittee that I chaired. And I think it's wonderful that we're doing a local agreement here and how we're going to soften the blow to the district by having these two other entities participate. And it really sets the stage next two legs of this trail, which is completed. Great job, Eric.
Thank you. And the other final portion is the budget. And if you're watching really, really closely, the budget number does need to be updated to reflect this most recent version. But we'll make sure and get that lined up as well in an updated version of the budget that now shows the reimbursement from the two cities correctly based on this as well. So getting all three of those in a line, and they'll all check out by the time it's ready.
Eric, it sounds like you've got this moving through, but what happens if either of the other parties backs out?
We have essentially verbal, not confirmation, but verbal agreement that they will do what they can to get this approved, and we have quite longstanding partnerships with both La Vista and Omaha, the Parks Department, on these projects, specifically South Omaha Trail, where we've been very supportive of their effort, and La Vista has responded a couple times positively as to including this in their budget. They were very appreciative of the last phase of West Papio Trail. They look forward to getting this connection done as well. They're partnering on the Hell Creek Bridge stabilization through this area, so we expect that both should move forward. If they do not, I guess we would have to bring back and potentially make a change and reconsider this, but we do have verbal agreement that they will do what they can to get this approved.
Along that line, then, you're not going to wait for the ultimate agreements to go ahead and move ahead with the design, right?
We expect to sign the design contract after it's approved by the board and move forward with the design. And so I guess in the event that this agreement did totally fall apart or one of the two parties opted out, we would revisit the interlocal for the reimbursement portion. But we do still intend to move forward with the design because the priority that we've had on this project for a number of years.
Now, looking ahead then to the ultimate construction phase of this,
yep.
What kind of a cost share do we expect from the same partners?
We'll probably suggest a similar cost breakdown, 60-20-20, and that's similar to what we've used in the past. On the last phase of West Papio, it was 75 NRD, 20 Papillion, 5 La Vista. So this is kind of in that same area, but a little bit more support from the other parties. The construction is tentatively set for spring to fall of 2018. That would leave two fiscal years for us and would put the reimbursement into the 2019 budget for La Vista and give plenty of time for Omaha to also work that into their budget. So we've got a little flexibility on when we would potentially ask for that reimbursement of that 20% each.
And then one final question. When we get to the construction phase, will there be any federal or state funds coming into this?
Not on this project. We don't expect that.
No. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Craig Conley?
Aye.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. Thank you. Now moving ahead to Number 10, review and recommendation on the amendment to the Western Sarpy Clear Creek interlocal agreement with Sarpy County. Martin?
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. As you heard earlier tonight, Western Sarpy has been going on for over a decade, or 15 years, I guess, is probably the number. And so as with any project with a longstanding life like that, it's went up in price. The fortunate thing about this project and tonight's action is actually Sarpy County has contributed some percentage of the district's costs in this project. As you can see in paragraph number 2, the Corps of Engineers has paid 65% of the project costs. Non-federal portion is 35%. That's split among the three entities, and also DNR has provided a big share of that cost. Of our share, PAPIO's share, 25% has been cost shared by Sarpy County. Back in 2001, they signed the original agreement with a maximum to exceed amount not to exceed a 346.67. And in 2012, we upped that to 810,000, which is right here. So you can see there's been a big change in project costs. And now tonight we're actually proposing that we increase that limit to 870,000. Sarpy County has approved that agreement as of last week of June. And so it's basically up to the board if you want to take their money or not, I guess, is the bottom line. But they've agreed to increase their cost share up to that amount. This is projected on the total build-out of the project, so this should be the last time we have to go back to the county for money, I hope, because unless some unforeseen thing happens, that should be it. We're actually in the stage right now with the Corps of Engineers of doing crediting, trying to show them our expenses and trying to get credit for what we've spent to date and close this project out, hopefully maybe later this year or early next year. So the motion is that the Board of Directors would authorize the General Manager to execute the proposed amendment to the interlocal agreement with Sarpy County for the Western Sarpy Clear Creek Flood Control Project, and as shown on the board there. So we'd recommend that as staff, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Director Teaser.
This was a $12 million project when we started it, and we ended up at $43 million.
Yeah, it's...
Thank you, federal government.
Been a big increase in project costs. Their estimation is very poor, I think. And then design also changed a lot, too. But we're glad to get it finally over with. It's been a long time coming for everybody.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. Thank you. Now moving ahead to the Whitted Creek item. This is the Whitted Creek Refinement Project, and that's a new term. So, Martin, your job is to educate us on that, too.
We paid extra for that term, by the way. Emily Holtzclaw with CH2M is here with me tonight. Emily actually designed the project back in 2009 when it was built. At the time, it was a rehabilitation project. We called it a restoration project. And cost over $1 million. There was a bunch of DEQ funds in it as well as NET. So it was, the cost share was considerable from other entities. But we took basically, I think, 14 foot of grade drop out of this.
27 feet.
27 feet and 3,000 lineal feet of creek. So a big change of, it was an extremely steep head-cutting gully. And it was just very, put our levees in jeopardy. So what they did is took this grade out in multiple steps, 14 steps, I guess, essentially, about 2 foot per step. And so over the years, it's functioned real well, but we've had, as any creek, you have some changes that occur, erosion, flood events, that type of thing, high water events. And so we had three spots we identified that were, we thought, endangering the project. We need to get those fixed before we actually lose the project at some point. And so let's go to the maps, if you wouldn't mind, Bill, kind of show you where these are at. First of all, this is in Bellevue. I should point that out. You rotate this map. It's right south of Cape Art Road, which is up here, 25th Street. This runs into the Papio Creek, the main Papio Creek. This is the 613 levees down here. So it's along Tregaron Golf Course. Levee's on the north side, and there is no levee on the south side. It's, like I said, a very deep, entrenched creek. It actually has a limestone bed in parts of it, which is odd for a creek in this area, but we think the creek was moved probably years ago and into a, probably the wrong location, quite honestly. But so for years we fought it, and in 2009 we actually fixed the project time. Go to the photographs and behind that. This shows where the locations are at again. The first spot here is there's just some erosion occurring on outside of a bend, so we're going to go back in and put riprap soil in that area and then revegetate it. This is above Scarborough Drive. Next photograph, Bill. Then we have a, what they call a cross vein. It's a structure that goes across the creek. It's a limestone structure. It's been undermined due to water's been cascading over top. It's undermining the support of this arm. So this arm's going to eventually fall in if we don't fix it. So this is the same picture here. Next photograph, Bill. Then there's a structure down below that. The crestone is actually limestone, but for some reason it's kind of decayed. So we'll go back and rebuild that with new stone. So there's actually three locations. You go back to the bid opening summary, Bill. Received bids on June 30th. There was actually two bids received. They ranged from $70,331 to $85,110. The parent low bidder was from Valley Corporation of Valley, Nebraska. The engineer's estimate was $43,530. So it came in above the engineer's estimate, which is kind of par for the course for myself this year. My bid things always come over the estimate. But we do have a recommendation letter from Emily's company, and that's, I think, the maybe right after this bid summary, Bill. And maybe Emily can explain conclusions they reached as they looked at these bids, and they did some discussions with the vendors as well.
Certainly. We did talk with several of the contractors, and the general feedback that we got back from them is that they've got plenty of work, and this is a small project, and mobilization costs are relatively high on such a small amount of work, and that the, when you look at the line items of the bid items on the unit cost items, such as rock and dirt and things like that, we were very close to the estimate. On one item, working on the cross vein structure, that one contractor just told us he just doubled it because he could, in case he has to do it twice. And then for the mobilization costs and also bypass pumping, you know, any work in an active stream is kind of a high risk for a contractor, and we estimated the work would take about 2 to 3 weeks of actual work, and we allowed them a six-month window of time to do that work in to allow some flexibility for them to fit it in between other items and allowing for weather conditions. So they did say that that helped, but that is where they put their risk and their dollars. And we did talk to another contractor who didn't bid, and they bid they thought it would be about $100,000. So we just didn't think with the current market of the work people have got and what assumptions that they're making that there would be a benefit to rebidding it and getting in lower costs. So that was all part pieces of why we recommend moving forward.
Well, thank you. Chair to entertain a motion.
Move a staff recommendation.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Seeing no public comments, directors? Director Frost.
What's your imported fill procurement?
It was actually a net removal from the site. So it's...
Soil.
Soil.
So you're buying back the soil? $25 a yard?
We had a bid item there, but we didn't anticipate needing to use it. So we just wanted to get a unit price for them in case we ran into, often in stream conditions, you run into just mucky soil that you can't dry out or it's not worth the effort of farming it and getting it dry, and it's cheaper to import it back in. So that was sort of a placeholder in case we ran into soil conditions where they couldn't reuse the soil, but we didn't anticipate on needing to use it. We just wanted to get the unit price agreed to.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Keezer?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. Thank you. Then we're down to item 12, review and recommendation on the amended district erosion and sediment control program. These are the rules and regulations. Terry Schumacher.
Good evening. In 1986, the state legislature adopted the Erosion and Sediment Control Act. And at that time, all the NRDs adopted that. And then in 1995, the program was amended to include 90% cost share for requirement of installing corrective measures to correct any erosion issues. And then in 2015, the NRDs and Department of Natural Resources worked with the legislatures to amend the State Sediment Erosion Control Act to remove the 90% cost share requirement. And basically, the new amended rules and regulations that are in front of you tonight, and they've already been adopted by the Natural Resources Commission, and removes that 90%. The language now says what we may provide cost share, which I think is what everybody felt comfortable with. It added a definition for ephemeral erosion, and it basically strengthened the NRD's authority to issue cease and desist orders. And that's really how we've gotten to where we are today. And this is really a whole new template on the rules. So we're basically taking out what's in our current policy and then inserting this. The one thing with this, it does require a public hearing for the revision of the district rules and regulations. So it's being recommended to the board that they adopt these amended regulations in July for consideration of public hearing and final adoption at the August Board of Directors meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. To entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? I have a question. Are we going to consider a cost share amount, or are we going to go with zero?
I think the wording is
it says may
consider cost share, but there's no percentage. It's up to the board to on a case by case basis.
All right, and we're at this point we have no recommendation.
No.
Okay.
Until we get a project, then.
I mean, I will tell you, John, our normal cost share rate on conservation practices is 75%.
So maybe so.
Okay.
I mean,
any other questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Director Keezer?
Yes.
Chairman John Thompson?
Yes. Thank you. Now we're done to item 13. Review and recommendation on the Water Sustainability Fund application for the Western Sarpy County Aquifer 3D Modeling Project. Amanda, please. Amanda Flynn, USGS, and Paul Woodward.
Yes.
Okay. Good evening. Just to update you, this is kind of a continuation. We currently have a water sustainability fund that was granted to us to collect the airborne electromagnetic survey information in the southwestern Western Sarpy County area. That's moving forward. Those flights should take place here in August. What we discussed beyond that was once we get that detailed data, we'll have a lot of information. And it's right there at our fingertips, but we have to have something to be able to use it as effectively as we can. So what we looked at would be a possible way to do that is to put everything into a 3D model. And by that, I mean the data we get back will give us like the top of the Dakota Sandstone Aquifer and the bottom and some of the different layers in between, and we'll be able to kind of look at that and map that on a case-by-case basis. But what would be maybe taking it to the next level here would be to take all the wells that we could be concerned about, worried about, all the water quality data we've collected over the years, and put it into this, organize it into the same location so we could see where people's different well locations were at. So depth-wise within that aquifer, we could see where we've had tests of higher nitrates before. And the idea would be that would lead us to be able to make some better informed decisions about if people put in new wells, how deep or where should they put them. Could be helpful to the municipalities if they do need additional wells in the future. I mean, recently Springfield has moved or drilled another well because of nitrate issues in their first couple wells, so that's something they're continuing to deal with in that area. So looking to do that, we did talk with Amanda at USGS. She had actually started a little bit of the work bringing some of the wells in to a 3D model. And that 3D model is a software that currently USGS is one of the only people that has a license to, but it's from over in Denmark. It is talked about amongst the NRDs. It might be used a little bit more throughout the state in the future, and that UNL might be taking all the state's aerial survey data that we've gotten over the years and trying to put it and organize it into this one type of system. So we would be at least be in a system that's consistent across the state. So we have prepared a scope and a fee tonight to look at doing that. We would look at a one-time application this July to the Water Sustainability Fund for 60% of the non-federal cost. And then actually, you know, USGS and us are pretty much splitting almost 50-50 our cost share rate, if you can see that in the table there. So that's what's proposed in the application so far. I did want to show you a little bit of what Amanda has started, so you can maybe visualize how that might be effective as we look at this as part of our groundwater management plan. I feel there's that little video. Somewhere there. Maybe you just hit the play button. Is it there? No. There it is.
Yep.
Okay, there you go. So this is a start of basically how each of the wells is brought in, and that's currently all she's using right now is the data from the different wells. So when we actually have the AEM data, we'll get more detailed tops and bottoms of the aquifer, know where each of the wells is located, and then based on the intensity or the different amounts of nitrates that we've seen, be able to add that to it. So it'll be kind of spotty with where we have different water quality data, but the idea what that would tell us then is also where do we need to get more water quality data at to kind of make this robust enough to tell somebody what their issues might be as we talk about the nitrates in this area. And in doing the application, we really found out there's, you know, Gretna, together Gretna and Springfield are serving about 7,000 people. And with the number of just domestic wells, private wells that have been put in that area is another 3,000 people. So we're talking about 10,000 people that are getting their water from this aquifer. And we don't know what the issues might be yet. And that's really kind of what we're driving to as we're doing this. So Amanda, maybe a couple things to add about what they actually plan to do as we do this project.
Right. So what you saw in the video actually was the geologic layers. And so when we pull in the AEM data that's being collected, we'll actually be able to pull out the aquifer unit layers. So we'll be able to see the layers where there's the good sand, where we can get the water, and then actually be able to map out the clay layers between them. So we'll be able to see connectivities between the different aquifer units and also the land surface units. And then
So if we pull, that's with pulling in the AEM data and additional well data that we may be able to collect from new registered wells and also from drilled wells that didn't find water. We can collect those kind of logs from the different drillers in the area as well. And so if we are able to compile all that together, we're able to get a good idea on where there's water and then be able to compute how much water is actually available and if it's in confined areas or if it's in a rechargeable area, so we can get an idea on the sustainability of the resource and also, as Paul was pointing out, pull in some of the water quality data and determine if any of those little pocket reservoirs are impaired in any way. One of the other things I want to point out about the Sarpy County region is that it's very geologically complex. There's been uplift, there's been erosion, and then there's been glaciation. So when I was saying pocket reservoirs earlier, it's the aquifer isn't continuous across the entire area. There's some areas where there's no aquifer at all, and then you go another mile, and then there's a pretty decent aquifer. And so this will help us determine the extent of those aquifers.
That's all we got.
Hey, are you anything else you want to add?
So the recommendation tonight and the action is just to support us submitting the Water Sustainability Fund grant that's due here at the end of this month. Those would be formally decided upon in December. We would likely be awarded the money at the beginning of the year, but we wouldn't actually start spending this money till we got the AEM data back, which is likely next June. So we are talking about nothing expended from our side of the table this fiscal year. It would all be in the next two following fiscal years.
And it would be subject to those sustainability funds.
Yeah, and we haven't taken any action on a joint funding agreement with USGS, so we would see if we even got those funds before we brought back a joint funding agreement.
Approval.
So, Chair, to entertain a motion on this.
Motion to approve.
I have a motion from Fred Conley. Is there a second? I'll second it. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Director Cross.
On these slides, can you tell where the nitrates are concentrated? You're saying Springfield's wells are...
Right.
So can you pull that up on these slides or not?
In the model, the 3D model?
Yeah.
What we're going to end up doing is... we'll input the wells like you saw, and then towards the bottom of the wells, I don't know, since I don't have it up in front of me, I'm going to talk with my hands, but there was a thinner part of the well that went down and then a thicker part of the well, and that's actually the well screen, so that's where the water is going to be coming out of. So my idea on this would be to color code the well screen based on nitrate concentration, so that way we get a visualization as to what the nitrate is and the elevation of the aquifer, and that would help inform as to whether it's shallow, whether it's deep, and if there are any other wells close by that we haven't measured that could potentially be impacted that are in the same area.
Is there any difference in the time of year that you sample these?
This is part of the ongoing groundwater quality sampling, and so they usually get sampled in June, July, and August about. But with this being as deep in the water system, but since this is nitrates already in the water system, it's not going to be impacted by anything that happened previously that season. It's already been introduced.
We've had wells that water has changed in nitrate composition at different times of the year. In the winter, it went away.
We would be able to, if this was a well that we were sampling, have like a period of record on it, we would be able to import the graph next to the well to also show the different times the well's been sampled. So you'd be able to see throughout the period of record if there is any seasonality in it.
Anything else, Kurt? Director Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we went ahead with the AEM original concept to, find out what the things are on the ground, that's okay. We got awarded. This is a going to be over $250,000, which is, as far as sustainability rules say, it's a major project versus minor. So it would be considered in the big project category.
No, the requested amount will be below $250,000. It's the $117,960 would be their grant amount. Yeah.
Aside from that, okay, thanks for that correction. But
right.
You're telling me USGS is the only one with a license for this particular software in the entire country?
I don't know about the entire country. They are at the time the only one in the state that I'm aware of. Do you know of any others, Amanda?
We're the only ones in the state.
Okay. With the potential of the, you know, there's 12 projects that have been awarded for this AEM across the state of Nebraska. The way I'm thinking, okay, USGS are going to go after the other 11 projects and try and get a 3D thing, or is this just gravy on the potatoes?
Well, with the other ones right now, there are some, I'm just thinking of the map I've seen from NRA. Some people are still continuing, like the 3 mile by 3 mile grids. In that case, you wouldn't necessarily bring that in because you can't map. The well probably didn't fall on that section line. Here, this is kind of us in Lower Platte South NRD. We have pretty detailed blocks of data that we're getting. That's why we're able to do the wells there. So could USGS do it in a couple other locations? I think so.
You put the fear of 10,000 people drinking potential water that might have nitrates in it, although it was, I believe, last month we had a great report by all nitrate levels are acceptable. So now you're asking to spend $274,000 to prove what? And don't answer, that's rhetorical. I'm not convinced. First of all, when the Water Sustainability Fund discussion on these was, they're not really sustaining the water. They're not sustaining any flood control. Why are we even approving those? And they're approved because there are no other small projects to consider. Boom, let's spend $2.5 million. Okay, so you got data, now what happens? Okay, even if we get 3D data, now what happens? And it'd be nice to put it on a shelf. Look at this, or in a computer, of course. But then what? It's not going to affect any projects that I can see. If we're going to drill more wells, you're going to have to go through the normal well monitoring anyway. So I think this is a luxury item, very, very luxury. To say, oh, we got 3D model. Look at this. Hold up on your phone and show people. Well, now what happens? It's still taxpayer money, whether it's Water Sustainability Funds, some PAPIO, and some USGS, and I haven't analyzed the breakdown yet, but I'm not convinced we need it.
I might just explain what we would use.
You're not going to change my mind.
I know, I understand. So we take it to a 3D model, and does it just sit on a shelf? No, I think we actually plan, you know, if it works out geology-wise, as we're doing our groundwater management plan update, which I'm going to give an update on Thursday, Hunt. So we'll probably make this its own groundwater management area, this southwestern Sarpy County, western Sarpy County area. And then there could actually be, you know, depending on what we find out as to some of the extent of some of the water quality issues, there could actually be a plan in place to talk either about working with landowners on nutrient management, if that's the case. It could be a recommendation that someday this area just needs to be supplied by public water. That's already gone through all the testing and everything else. And so we're not worried about the individual, you know, couple thousand people that may have their own well and don't know what they're drinking. So I think, yes, that's where the concern is kind of headed now. You know, how far do we continue to chase this? I guess I don't know that at the moment, Jim, but
Can I add something? I'm sorry. The other bonus to this is not only the water quality side, but also the quantity side. We are seeing an increase in usage, and we aren't entirely positive how much water is there, and this kind of information would really help give a good idea as to whether or not the pumping is sustainable.
You haven't changed my mind either.
Okay.
Are you saying you've seen a decline in groundwater levels?
No, I have not seen. But
then how do you justify that the use has increased?
The increase in the amount of wells that has gone in.
Okay. It would say how many more wells can this aquifer support long before there's that many wells in place to deplete it.
Right.
So it'll give you a proactive approach to saying, until your faucet runs dry, we'll be able to tell how many more holes you can punch into the aquifer and how much more use you have long before it occurs. And now we do it, though, totally the half-assed backwards way. Oh, my well's dry. Well, you pumped the aquifer dry. Sorry.
Any other questions or comments, please? Hearing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Okay, Director Fred Conley.
Aye.
Director Teaser.
Yes.
Director Thompson?
No.
Chairman John Conley.
Yes. That'll appear on the agenda for Thursday's meeting. That concludes our agenda, I believe, and therefore we are adjourned. Take about a 5-minute break, please.
All right. We'll call the meeting of the FBL social meeting in order.
Yeah, we're going to
the notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted on outside as well as the back wall. As usual, I will impose a 3-minute speaking limit from public testimony with that crown call.
John Conley.
Here.
Frost.
Yeah.
Wooden.
Yes.
Thompson.
Here.
Chairperson.
Yes. Adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second. Roll call, please.
Thompson.
Yes.
Woodle.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
John Conley.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes. I have before me proof of publication. Moving on, item 6, review and recommendation of the 2017 budget, draft 1, John Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you do the agenda?
Huh?
Did you adopt the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry about that. Attached to your for your view, and we again have the budget workshop, so I appreciate those who attended. I'll go over briefly some of the stuff I covered there. The total operating budget proposed is $67.2 million. That is a decrease of 6.5% from last year. We are proposing the same property tax levy as last year, 0.038034. The total property tax requirement is $23,043,097, and that's an increase of 4.8% from last year's. A property value at $100,000 would be $38.03 a year. Again, this is the first draft. You heard Eric even indicate that we've got some adjustments that we'll make to individual projects and programs as information, more information becomes available. Final valuations will not be forwarded until late August. So we are anticipating a 4.5% increase. We received preliminary appraisal values from Sarpy County, and those are reflected in this budget. Budget assumptions are, again, we talked about in the budget workshop, the $600,000 for the cash reserve. Again, that's less than 1 month's operating expense for the district. You would probably like to have at least a 2 or 3 month cushion, if not more. General cash on hand as of June 30th was $8,683,055. The dates to remember, again, the review here, August 9th is the subcommittee review of the second draft, and then the public input meeting is August 11th, and then the budget hearing and the adoption of the budget and where we set the tax levy for fiscal year 17 is at the September 8th, 2016 board meeting in Dakota City. Again, the property tax levy, again, proposes 0.038034. That would be the 11th year out of 12 where the district either lowered its property tax levy or kept it static. So we've got a pretty good record. I did have a 12-year property tax levy valuation comparison that I handed out, as well as how the district's levy comparison stacks up against other political subdivisions throughout the district. And again, we are less than 2% of most everyone's property tax bill. In fact, everyone's property tax bill in the district. For example, some comparisons, City of Omaha is 48 cents per hundred. Douglas County is 28. Fort Calhoun is 58 cents per hundred, and we're at 3 cents per hundred. So it gives you a little bit of scale of where the district stands with other taxing entities. Again, we went over kind of the first budget page. The valuation information, we are expecting a total valuation of $60,585,314,100. The valuation increases, again, we have Sarpy at 6.11 due to their preliminary numbers, and we are anticipating an overall increase of 4.86%, similar to last year. Again, 90% of the district's property tax revenue comes from Sarpy and Douglas County, and then the additional four counties split the additional 10% accordingly. I won't go through each individual page unless, in fact, there's a question or if someone wants to dig into it a little bit further. Again, staff is on hand, most of them, to answer any project-specific recommendation or any specific question on one of their programs. This again is pretty much a mirror budget from last year, and again there's differences, but there isn't any really one glaring example of more expenditures. This is a basic budget, meets all the obligations that the district has either executed through contract, interlocal agreement, or some other form of agreement. Most of the numbers are based on projections of spending. Again, they're estimates, they're educated estimates, maybe from what we spent last year, or they're actual estimates that we received, or actual bills, invoices that we know we're going to get, or actual costs that we know we will incur. For example, liability insurance, health insurance, all those types of things that we prepare for. This will change between today and the August meeting, just because it's kind of a moving target. You, for example, the valuations and some of the estimates we might get from other projects or other things that we're waiting on will change. Cost shares, like we approved, Eric will receive some news from hopefully La Vista and Omaha of their agreement on cost shares, and some things will be brought before this board between now and September that you either approve or disapprove, which will be removed or added to the budget. So it's a balanced budget. It does not raise the mill levy. And if you look at some of the other political subdivisions that are attempting to do this, we've done it for quite some time. To raise it one time in 12 years is not a bad record. And so again, I talked about population. We're besides the state of Nebraska, we're responsible for more citizens than anyone else. So we have a very populated district. We cover six counties, and so we have a lot of projects and programs. We also discussed a little bit about all the things we do, all the resources we spend, and maybe how to focus those in future budgets, where maybe we're not doing all the things that we do every year and taking those resources and putting them to possibly purchasing property and priority projects or reservoirs or anything else that this board determines to do. We're lucky. We're blessed with a high valuation and the urban area. That's a two-edged sword, though, because that gets you more responsibility, obviously, and more things that you need to take care of. We really continue to focus on maintenance and equipment to make sure we don't fall behind on those things, and we will continue to do so even if the board so chooses to prioritize maybe things a little more clear. And those will always stay a priority because you just can't fall behind on those things. They end up costing you way more if you let things go like that. So if there's anything else that we want to dig into, again, this is a working document. This is our document to manage our budget. The state gets probably 6 or 7 pages. So they're not entirely very interested in the details like this. This is for our use. And they just make sure that you don't exceed the bottom line and that you fall within the certain LID categories and things like that, which Terry has done and Gene have done an outstanding job making sure we do that. We have a ton of interlocal agreements. We spread the pain around on paying for things, and it's reflected again in this budget as well. And so, again, we're seeing a lot of pressure on prices, materials. You just had presentations on bids. You're seeing higher bids. Contractors are busy. We're seeing higher vendor costs. Regulations will never stop. They're only getting more and more intense, and we're spending more and more time meeting them, as well as reporting them. And so we just continue to have those things continue to eat up resources. So we have to get creative. If we don't want to borrow money, if we don't want to do things like that, then we have to work with the resources we have. And so this is what you have in front of you. It's a very balanced budget. It's a very fair budget as far as everything that we're required to fund or that you as a board have chose to fund. And so I'll be happy to entertain any questions or comments.
Any comments? Thank you, John. Moving on. Item 7.
But you have to review a recommendation on the first budget, first draft. You need a motion first before. Unless there's questions.
I move approval of the staff recommendation on the budget.
I'm sorry. Is there a second? Okay.
All right, now we're good.
Thank you.
Sean Malatz, 10404 North 132nd Street. I just have a couple, three quick questions regarding the budget. On page 12, where it discusses the Missouri River and the money from the state appropriations.
Yes.
Could you provide a little bit of more detail on how the flow of the money is supposed to come from the state? Because you know, that's $1 million deficit that we're paying for.
They have not fully established the rules and regs for that fund. And how it was passed in the legislature is that the money would be transferred from the cash reserve to the DNR. And by the DNR's rules and regs, they have to kind of establish a fund for that with rules and regs that we have to follow. It will probably be run like the Resource Development Fund or the Water Sustainability Fund, where we will submit reimbursement for certain eligible activities. If that's engineering, land rights, construction, that's probably how it will be set up. But we don't have that exact structure yet, so we have to list it as kind of – and it's going to be a 2 or 3 year process. So those funds will come in over that time frame, not all at once. They will not just transfer us $13.7 million.
And you've actually done a time schedule on this to show that $1 million will actually be a deficit.
We're responsible for a certain part because we have, you know, $9 million from our other partners, which will be over a 4-year period, and that'll be $750,000 a year for 4 years, and then the state money, and then we'll be responsible for everything above and beyond that, as well as our contribution. So we're going to spend that $1 million either at the very beginning or at the very end, but we'll be spending $1 million or more. We'll be spending close to $5 or $6 million.
When will it's all said and done. When will this start, the project?
Well, we're expecting permits. And I can look at Marlon on that. Expecting permits in the fall, and hopefully we will be out for bids in the spring for construction. But that's, you know, we're counting on the Corps. And they will have to issue the permit, and headquarters will have to review that. And I can't speak for them, but their time frames can be very lengthy.
So the $6 million may or may not occur in this fiscal year.
Maybe,
maybe construction costs.
Hard to tell. It's just, yeah, it's a guess.
I also had a little concern inside of that program that there is some monies budgeted for congressional relation services. Isn't that already part of your $78,000 that you're spending?
No, that's the general fund? We may need those again. I think we tied that back since it's a special project, we added some funds in for that. It's outside of the scope of just what you pay as your retainer, because it is a special kind of project that we typically don't deal with on a yearly basis. So we may have to use that to liaison with the Corps to speed up the permitting process at the federal level, which means Senator Fisher or Fortenberry or Ashford or whoever's elected may have to interact with the Corps to move it along. And so we put a little bit in there to make sure we can pay for those services.
You have to pay the senators to do that?
No, we have to pay a representative in Washington, D.C. to help do that. It's called government relations, and that's what you pay for.
Isn't that our senator's job?
Well, it's your senator's job, but when you have to have someone that can liaison with the Corps at that. I can't be in Washington, D.C. for 2 or 3 weeks out of a year. And so you have to have a representative there that can liaison with the Corps at the headquarters level as well as with the congressional folks and us to coordinate those efforts. Now, if you want to send me to D.C. for a month, I'd be glad to go, but it's extremely...
How many dollars have you budgeted for that, John?
We'd have to pull it
out. Was the 50 for that?
No, that'd be attorney's fees for land right acquisition, all that. It'd be a very minimal amount of that, very small.
Okay. I have a question on the Sarpy County... Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership.
Yep.
Who are the members that you're expecting to be part of that?
Well, I believe the initial was Gretna, Springfield, Sarpy County itself, Bellevue, Papillion.
Could you get me the breakdown of who they are and what you're anticipating?
We're going to have a presentation to the board.
We'll have a presentation Thursday.
Oh, okay. We'll have it Thursday.
In the general manager's
report,
there's like a
permanent
faction that breaks
everything down. So will that be online?
Oh, it's on the website now. You can pull it off.
And look at it. And it'll go through a little bit of what your anticipated costs are as well.
Yep.
Okay. On the rural water districts,
yes.
How many employees are at Washington County?
Where's Zach? Did he leave? Figures. Washington County Rural Water, how many?
Two.
And they're...
Oh, that's right. Okay, because we have to reimburse the district for Carrie and Jolene. And who else is on
Could
there?
Could you just give me the breakdown of the three water district employees that's allocated to them?
Yeah. It's easy. We can do that.
You have it. And then I guess one little item that I noticed just... while I was sitting here on your work comp on page 3,
mm-hmm.
Why are you anticipating that to be 2.5 times what last year's actual is?
Which one?
It's on line.
On which page?
4153 on page 3. Work comp insurance, your actual is $45,000.
Gene, did you want
to? Well, work comp actually was 4.5.
Well, you've budgeted $100,000 and your actual is $45,000.
There may be other things in there too. Well, again, this.
We'll look at it.
But again, okay. This will change. This is the first draft, so there will be modifications.
Well, that's all I have is the first draft. Thank you.
Yep.
Any comments or questions?
I had a discussion with Mr. Winkler, and I'm just going to share it with all of you. I have concern in the equipment budget when we name brand specific. And I expect that staff has to have good justification for being brand specific. And I'm looking here now at a QuickView Air HD pipe inspection system, Cameron, and wondering why that has to be brand specific.
Aren't there a lot of pipe inspection camera systems out there?
No, we have an existing piece of equipment that this would be compatible with. So we can't get a brand
new. Cameras are not generic.
No.
Okay.
These are very high tech inspection systems. So you'd have to get a compatible system to go with your existing piece of equipment.
It's not a whole system. It's just a camera.
And part of that conversation with Ms. Connelly is when we go through the budget, the equipment budget we bring to the board before it's approved. And typically when we spec a brand or a like Caterpillar or a Bobcat is we already have either attachments, tray or other pieces of equipment that can only be utilized with that brand. So it's something that you can just open it up and then you get a low bid from International and then none of your attachments work. So that's why when we do spec it is for a very specific reason. Now we'll be more clear about that in the future so we know the board knows that this is the only brand that we can use. Now if it's a vehicle or something that it doesn't necessarily we don't care. We just want the low bid, then it can be Ford, Dodge, Chevy, whatever. And typically we don't spec a name or we don't put a brand name on there. So that's really the only reason that we'll put a specific model or specific brand.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
On your Bobcat thing,
mm-hmm.
There's more dealers than Bobcat down the road. You can go to Titan Machinery in Fremont and bid for a Bobcat. Just want to put that out there.
Well, Bill, note that, please. Okay, thank you.
Other comments? Roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Frost?
No.
Wooten?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you. Item 7, review and recommendation of bids for dam site 15 surplus property. Lori? Good evening. Again.
Okay, so if you'll remember last month, we brought to you a small parcel at the Dam Site 15A project that had not originally been necessary to the project. However, the landowner had requested that we purchase this additional 10 acres as we would have cut off their access to it. Purchasing the 10 acres we felt was a better way to go than trying to provide them a road. And we did have some inquiries from adjacent landowners who do have access to that property. They were interested in purchasing it. So we brought that to the board. You did approve us advertising it for sale by a sealed bid process. We advertised on June 23rd and June 28th in the Omaha World Herald. And opened bids at 10 a.m. on July 5th. We received two bids, both adjacent landowners. The Boyer Young Real Estate bid $325,710, or $30,000 per acre. And we do recommend that you accept their bid. I can answer any questions.
I move the staff recommendation.
Second. Okay. Public comment? Questions? Roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Frost?
Yeah.
Wooten?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. That, ladies and gentlemen, concludes our agenda.